saving money in your next project when you shop at Menards. We have everything you need for keeping your outdoor power equipment in tip-top shape. Ensure your lawnmower or boat is running smooth this year. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale. View our entire selection of FVP batteries today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of the great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at WeightWatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
All right, welcome to our Q&A. Monday morning, we're doing it. Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us. I'm Tony Bruschi. I'm here. We're going to be talking about a couple different cases today. We're going to start with David, and your questions, please drop them in the comment section on Substack and YouTube and Facebook, and we're going to try and get to them as we go through here. It's impossible to look at the tragic fate of 13-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez without feeling a profound, sickening sense of systematic and familial failure. A highly vulnerable girl cried out for help through three separate disappearances in a single year. Yet, she was met with absolute silence from the adults tasked with protecting her. Now that her remains have been discovered in an impounded Tesla and a 21-year-old pop star is in handcuffs, the entire world is finally starting to pay attention. So how does a child scream so loudly in plain sight, only to be completely ignored until she becomes a horrific true crime spectacle? That's what we are getting into today. David has within 24 to 48 hours of the arrest, there's going to be something going on here. He's either going to be charged today or he's going to be let loose. Very likely charges are going to be coming down. So by the time you're watching or reading this, the charges may have already been made. We're going to assume that they have and discuss the case and your questions. Let's start with our first one. It says, I'm looking at my own kids on their phones and I'm terrified. She was allegedly groomed on Discord back in 2022, right in her own house. How do we even spot this before they walk out the door? And I get it. That's a tough question, especially for parents that have kids that age. I have a daughter exactly that age. And it's a weird one. Because they are on their devices. They are doing this. It's not as easy as it used to be where you had like the family computer and you could kind of keep an eye on what they're getting into. They got their own devices. They got this, they got that. They got their own accounts. What do you do? How do you keep track of that stuff? Robin, what's your thoughts on where this case is sitting and our first question there?
Yeah, so I'll go with the first question first because this is the one that all of us face every single day with our kids. And it's constantly evolving. But we can keep it really simple. And years ago, I was a board member of the Innocent Lives Foundation. And so we face this every day as we're out there trying to uncover nefarious individuals trying to groom our children into doing things that are definitely not in their best interest. And so as with whether it's true crime, recruiting spies, or all those skill sets I learned in all these different areas of my life gave me the skill set to be the number one thing that's most important to me and you too, Tony, and as well as everyone in our audience, that is being a parent. Because the number one thing you always want to think of is, what am I doing that's going to help or hinder a healthy dialogue and relationship with our children? Because that's the first thing we need to do. We need to have that healthy relationship. So here you are sitting at home. You're thinking, oh my God, this Celeste thing is horrendous. David, is this whole thing is horrendous. How do I prevent it? Communication, communication, communication. And then you got to think of, what can you do to inspire your kids to want to dialogue with you? Here's the toughest thing ever. You can't judge what's coming out of their mouths. You can't judge the friends. You cannot impose what you think is right or wrong on them yet. You have to discover it. You have to inspire them to want to share it so you can actually work the problem together. That's all life is all about. How do you work these challenges and problems together? Now, you'll have resistance. You'll have all these things. But the most important thing always is to be curious. Watch for, and here's the major tell always. Watch for behavior pattern changes, because the number one thing that groomers do is isolate their prey. They want to get them isolated. Just look at all the cults we cover. What mm-hmm. do all these cults do? They isolate, they control, they shame, they use power over them. And so if you notice a wobble in your children's lives with their communication with you or others or anyone else, that's where you don't overreact. Don't go, oh my God, freak out and judge. And because all you're going to do is isolate them more. They're going to feel more ashamed. You know, you inspire them to share by having them. I remember I had an acronym I used, and one of the first one is in it was T. Teach. Have your kids teach you what they're doing. Have them show you and educate you on how they're doing, what they're doing, and most importantly, who's in their lives. The rule in our house, when my kids are in their late 20s now, but even younger, I remember when they were on these gaming platforms, my wife didn't want them to be able to communicate with anyone. You can't talk to anyone online. I'm like, unrealistic, because either you can be part of it and aware of it, or you can outlaw it and they're just going to hide it from you. Yeah. And so the big rule in our house was, educate me on who you're talking to so we can have a dialogue and discussion. And so that every time you got off your game or at the end of the day, tell me who you played with. I want to hear about them. I want to hear, you know, if that's what you allow in your house. And so I was always about, the number one thing always was transparency, transparency, transparency. Don't judge it, because that way, if you're not judging it, you can shift it by asking questions. Hey, how is this individual helping you or hindering you with what you want to achieve? How are these behaviors healthy or unhealthy in your lives? Are they doing this? Are they doing this? And so allowing people, including your own kids, to discover choices and consequences for choices hand in hand with you to keep them safe through that communication. Granted, who knows right or wrong. I'm just telling you, that's what we did in our house. Yeah. And that's what I'm always looking for. I'm looking for wobbles and behaviors, and we just address them like this.
Well, I think the reality is so many parents are parenting in a way that mimics how they were raised. I mean, it's how I was raised. And we look back and go, I wonder why that didn't work out so well. Because a lot of it involved isolation, control, and shame.
Yes.
To control. And if you truly want to help that person become an individual that can navigate the world, isolating them, controlling them, and shaming them are not the correct routes. It's inspiring them to do good, to make the right choices. It's not shaming, but that is for so many of us, that's so, it's like, it's foreign. It breaks the mold of how we thought that this is how you raise children. It's not. I mean, you're not going to get the results you're looking for if that's the way you're doing it. Because guess what? You know what also is happening out there? The predators are using the exact same pattern, the isolation, the control, and the shame.
100%.
It's funny that we end up doing that in our own homes sometimes to prevent people, or in our nearsightedness. Yeah. We think we're protecting our children from predators by doing the exact same that they're doing, to isolate, control, and shame, and then keep that person over here on the other side. And guess what? It feels familiar to the kids. It feels like home in a certain way.
Yeah.
When someone kind of sneaks in and kind of has the same sort of MO and the same sort of way of handling their emotions and their feelings. Well, dad handles things like that. Mom handles things like that. This person must have my best interest at heart too. But at the end of the day, it never does anything for the actual autonomy of the person to teach them how to deal with the world. I mean, we're looking at it right now quite a bit in the Duggar household. the isolation there, the control, the shame of just mm-hmm. having emotions in life. And look at those people. They're not remotely prepared for the real world. And the ones that are spinning out of control seem to be completely clueless that they're even spinning out of control. I completely agree. It is something, and I think one of the most powerful things that you've ever said to me, that you've said on the air, is just the words inspired them, because that's the lever that needs to be pulled every time. If you're trying to get something, if you're trying to get somebody, or you're trying to look out for someone's best interest, not just get them to do what you want them to do, but to get them to do what's going to be best for them in your own view. Especially if you're a parent, you're looking out for your kids. You want to inspire them to get there. You can't push them there. You can't shame them there. You're not going to control them there. You're not going to isolate them there. Inspire them, and that's what's key. And if you don't have the tools, you can end up in a frunk, basically.
Yeah. And you know, the bottom line for everything we ever did in my house and still do is always asking that question. Is what you're about to do or say going to help or hinder a healthy relationship with a healthy dialogue? Internal, external, absolutely everything. Because all problems in life are interpersonal problems. All problems in life are relationship problems. And probably the one thing I'm really, really good at, maybe two or three, if I'm lucky, but is I don't, and again, we've talked about this on the show. When I hear crazy shit, I don't freak out. I don't react. I get curious. And so me never reacting in a way that would create walls to go up or a feeling of shame or embarrassment, my kids are never embarrassed to share anything with me. They just share because they know I'm not going to overreact. And if it's a challenge, you don't even hear me say the word problem. If it's a challenge, what better resource it is than work it together? I love working challenges because our household has the philosophy of it's a great rep. As challenging as a situation is, with crazy relationships, with unhealthy, toxic people. I mean, my son and I were just talking about today, coming back from a camping trip, some of the crazy situations and people he's dealt with in life. And all we said was, that was a great rep. What did we learn? We were doing after actions on it all day this morning on a drive back from a camping trip. We are just working, constantly reworking. What did we learn? What could be different next time? Not that we would change. We both say this all times too. All the experiences we have in life makes us who we are. So there's no regrets over choices. But we could probably handle each situation a bit better. How we communicated, how we're being transparent, how we focus on the healthiness versus the unhealthiness. And so as you're facing this, kind of getting back again to the theme of this question, what can we do for our own kids? Inspire them, like you said, unlock it from within them to want to share their lives with you by not shaming them from the choices they're making at a young age.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is a big thing too. With there's probably a lot of parents listening right now going, I don't know that I've been doing that. You can change. Start now. Don't dig in and be like, well, it's not how I've been doing. Like, change. Just, you can do better. Everybody can do better. We can always do better. I hope the day I die, I'm like, well, if I had a few more days, I think I might do things a little bit better this way. Because it's always a journey. It's always learning and going from the reps that you have and trying to make better decisions as you progress. There's never just the one answer to everything.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to make sure, because I know we're about to move on. Here's one thing you can do. So here's a typical situation. You hear your kids say something to you. Our typical response is, don't do that. You shouldn't do it that way. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do this. Anything where you hear them say or do something and you're going to have that, shift it. You can stay on the same time and say, instead of saying you should do it this way, say, hey, what was the outcome you were seeking? What were you hoping to achieve? What were you hoping to do? So in other words, ask a what question with what, you know, in other words, start to help them gauge and think out the consequence of actions. It's like, what were the outcome you were seeking? Was that helping and hindering where you're going? If they're doing something at school or they're doing something with the friends and they said, well, so-and-so said something and something to me, I say, all right, what do you think the outcome of their actions they were seeking was? Do you think that was against you or for themselves? I mean, so you just keep asking questions non-judgmentally. So it gets their gears in their brain working a little bit more, thinking, playing these things out, doing the thought experiments together with them.
It sounds silly, but it doesn't. Because it's like, it's obvious things, but it's like, it's not so obvious all the time. when you're a parent, you take a step back and go, okay, yeah, I could definitely use a refresher on this. I could use some inspiration on this. So I think it's very important to say these things out loud because I don't think a lot of times it's done. Let's go to another question on this specific case. This is from Mark via Patreon. And if you want to join our Patreon, the link is in the description. Do you think David Burke, and this is assuming that he's part of this, so let's just play that, obviously innocent until proven guilty. Do you think David Burke targeted her specifically because her home life was such a mess? Like, did he see a psychological vacancy and just swoop in to play the savior so she'd willingly leave? It's kind of a loaded question because it almost, it's insinuating predatory behavior. I don't know if it's insinuating that he, you know, targeted her to kill her. I don't think anybody targeted anybody to kill anybody here, quite honestly. But I guess let's go back to the makeup of the relationship, because obviously there's video of the two of them sitting in front of the screen chatting at one point. So did he target her to have that relationship? We don't know the lines of the relationship. Were they just friends? Was it something more? We don't know. So did he target her because she was vulnerable, because her home life was more than a hot mess? What's your thoughts? Again, he was 19 at the time. She was 12, 13, around there. That's the age gap. Is this a predatory someone targeting at this point? I go ahead.
Yeah, target is an interesting word, isn't it? I think it was a relationship of opportunity that I think fit both of them where they were at, and they were playing into it because it's his behaviors are very predatory. I think, again, from what we see and observe from the outside in, who knows? But I really think, because when you look at his background, very religious family, religious background and upbringing, you have a very controlled environment. And typically we've been seeing this, we have our own confirmation biases going on right now because we've covered so many cults recently. A lot of times when you come up in such a controlled environment, one thing you're trying to do is exercise your own control. And that's what we kind of see in this situation, where he's exercising potentially some control. And I wouldn't call it targeted, but he saw an opportunity in someone who was looking to make a connection with someone because of something missing in her life, because of lack of healthy relationships in another area of her life. And here he is of a... probably, you know, saying some very good things, some very nice things, giving her validation. So he was doing the grooming behaviors that predators will do when they're targeting someone for horrendous things. Do I necessarily think that he was like thinking to himself, oh, I got a target of opportunity, I'm going to get her? No, I don't think it was like that. I think it was literally she came into his sphere of influence that he could see, and he had needs, he had control issues, whatever it was that she kind of fit together like this with that. So I think it was that combined with two brains that are under 24 years old doing stupid, emotionally impulsive, emotionally needy, both of them filling gaps and needs that were not fulfilled with healthy, stronger relationships in their closer immediate circle. And it just wound up in disaster.
And I have a lot of questions because, like, something inspired her to think that life is better hanging out, you know, allegedly with the David. As, you know, she was lying about her age, allegedly, from many people saying that she was 19 years old. We don't know if David knew her actual age. For all we know, she could have been lying to him the whole time. I'm not trying to make any sort of excuse for him. I'm just trying to look at what cards did the people have in their hands when they were playing them? And what did they believe they had while they were playing them? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think anybody, you know, really does, unless we can find some sort of proof that he knew her actual age. Either way, you got, again, not a lot of life reps here in terms of David either. So having a friend who's, you know, we now know is 13 at the time, if she's saying she's 19, she's coming from an unhappy family life, which a lot of people do, and predators do tend to prey on that. I just don't know if he was preying on that, or if it was he thought he was interacting with another teenager that was coming from an unhappy home, and they became buddies and they became friends, and something horrible happened, and they had to cover up a crime of her being dead. I don't know. I and I'm not saying that that is exactly what happened. I have no clue. But there's a lot of weird caveats in this case as far as who knew what and when. And I think that's what is going to come down to when this gets to court as far as any sort of accountability for life and death and what happened to Celeste yeah. Rivas Hernandez. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one. But I think, it comes down to a lot of lack of life experience here and how to handle the unexpected.
I think, yes. And, you know, and definitely to the point of one of our listeners, just, you know, it doesn't matter in the eyes of the law. Absolutely, it doesn't, because these are still choices.
Yeah.
What all these people involved really didn't have, kind of going back to our first question that we were talking about, no one had a great, healthy, mature relationship that was a loving critic saying, because, again, I know we talked with Coffendeffer again on Friday about this, you know, and I know your feelings on this too. I don't think this was a intentional murder for whoever did it. This screams of, oops, tragedy had been because we were really stupid and we're morons. And typically when really stupid morons do stupid things, the first thing you should do is let someone who isn't stupid weigh in. It's like, hey, we should call the cops. We should let, you know, we should, when something dumb happens, rational minds, sound minds say we need to bring transparency to this as fast as possible because horrendous mistakes happen from time to time. In order to move through this, we have to have transparency, open, honest communication, and move through it to work the problem that we just created for ourselves and this tragedy that we just created for ourselves and in our family and other families. But my conjecture on this one is that you had a lot of underdeveloped brains doing stupid and doubling down on stupid, making it worse and worse and worse until you wind up with a horrendously decomposed body of her in a Tesla. I mean, how stupid is that? That just rings about the age maturity level of the individuals involved in this.
It really does. It's going to be fascinating as this starts to play through the court system, if it starts playing through the court system. Like I said, as of this recording, he has a court date today. We don't know if he has a court date today. We are expecting charges today is officially what we're looking at. We'll let you know what happens there. We're recording this assuming that they're going to drop. But all of this is relevant based on where we're sitting right now. Again, curious to get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue to update this and give you more insight as this all progresses. I know a little bit later in the week, Bob Mott is going to be on with us. And we're going to be discussing kind of the legal end of where this is all sitting. Again, assuming that charges are imminent or have already come down by the time you're watching this. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
David Anthony Burke, known as David, is in a Los Angeles jail as of right now, as of this recording, being held without bail, and the clock is running. The DA's Major Crimes Division has a narrow window to either file formal charges or let him walk. A grand jury heard months of testimony, did not indict. The defense is already telegraphing its strategy. What comes next could define this case or could completely blow all of it apart. David's defense says he was, and this is interesting, the terminology I think is key, he was not the cause of Celeste's death. Not that he wasn't involved, not that he didn't know her. They denied causing her death specifically. I want to start there. What is that statement designed to do, not necessarily recognizing anything about what happened after, but just so much so that not the cause of the death. Is that strategic in the way that they're putting that out there?
It Jen? Is very interesting.
Yeah. There she is. Sorry. I want to make sure you're still there, Jen.
Yeah, I'm going audio for a moment.
Okay.
You sound good.
You know, so the yes, I think that could be strategic. Look, it's interesting. What are they exactly going to charge? He's being held under suspicion of murder, but that tells me that they're going to charge him with murder. I don't know what they have, but I think it is interesting that it's ambiguous right now. But I think when you see the complaint, it's actually going to be murder. And yeah. then, of course, the other desecration of a body and mm-hmm. hiding a body and all of that.
Yeah, I would have thought, you know, at the very least, they'll be able to get him on that because it's his car knowledge. I think they'll have an easier time proving his knowledge of it rather than potentially murder. So I think, does it sound like they're probably keeping all their options open on it, Jen?
Yeah, I think so. They don't want to get anything out there that isn't going to be dialed down on what they're going to actually charge with. Again, they can always charge the easier charges.
Yeah.
And then what we call supersede with additional charges. And we might see that here since they did this so quickly.
That's what I'm wondering about. Are they going in strong with this, with a murder charge, and then thinking, well, it might get lowered down here as time progresses and we're able to work through all of the details. You know, is that the strategy? Get him on something really strong initially so they can detain him and keep him versus if they went at with him with a lesser charge or there might be a stronger possibility of getting bail or bonding out of some sort and then the possibility or the risk of flight?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, they did the same thing. I don't know if you remember this with Brian Laundrie, even though they mm-hmm. didn't have him mm-hmm. in their grasp. Yeah. You know, the credit card fraud. We love to do that, right? You get them on something that can stick, and then you supersede with the bigger stuff. I still think this will be ultimately indicted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what are you thinking about the probability of then, again, just saying he gets indicted, that it's going to be pled out? And also, I'm going to do the worst thing is ask two questions at the same time. I'm so curious about when we might see some other potential charges or indictments about towards other people involved.
I think we lost,
I think we lost her.
I floored her with my question.
Yep. Yep. There we go.
So, Tony, what do you think about that?
Give me the question one more time. Rephrase it again for
me. So the second part of that is how long do you think it's going to be really before they start charging some other people? So I really want to focus on that, too, because I think there's other people involved. Because when you look at the stats, you look at the averages, you look at how these types of crimes are committed with people that are underage. They don't mm-hmm. really have a life arc of committing these things. Yeah. It's going to be involved. Oh, there she is. Is she back?
I think she's back. Yeah, I wonder. I do wonder about how long it's going to be, but if other people are going to be charged, how long it's going to take, or how many people are they getting to flip? Are they getting to become state's witnesses, like possibly Neo Langston, who was initially arrested, you know, taken from Montana down to California? He's been released now, and he's made his own statements. I'm wondering how many of those they're going for, not necessarily to arrest and put other people behind bars, but to go to what they believe is the source of this, the real reason that they may believe she is no longer around. But I wonder how much of that is a guessing game as to why she is no longer around, how much of that piece of this puzzle we just don't know the answer to, and investigators don't know the answer to, other than these are the pieces that were on the board at the time, so we better, you know, gather these ones up and figure out what's happening before we move any further. Jen, what are you thinking? How long until others may be arrested, if at all?
Well, I think the biggest thing that we're not really talking about is the digital environment mm-hmm. that he worked in. He actually yeah. said he doesn't have any friends. His whole life is on screen. That's how he made friends. That's how he cultivated his music. That's how he got millions of followers. He talks all about that. I'm wondering what's happening behind the scenes with the digital forensics and what they're determining with that. I think that's going to help figure out who else may be complicit in this mm-hmm. and what actually happened. You know, what they planned and what they did. I know that we talked about this before, Tony, about could this just be literally a situation where it was an accident? It was mm-hmm. just a drug-fueled night and something happened badly. I don't think it's that. I think it was something more sinister.
Do you really? Like what? What? Because again, I'm on the, you know me, I always go the least route of least resistance when it comes to those things. I was thinking it was an accidental type of thing. When you just look at the type of background, but at the same time, though, open to all possibilities, what makes you think it was more sinister?
I think it was more sinister when you look at some of the, and I know we have to be careful here because art
doesn't always imitate life, but it often does. Yeah. And I think you just have to look at some of the sinisterness of the art he created and then combine that with what we understand was in his place after the police left that LAPD didn't collect, like the burn machine. And horribly sinister. The situation her body was in. Now, we all know that most people mutilate bodies because they need to hide them, not because they're enjoying it.
Right.
But we don't know here. I mean, it could be that he was. And there is a certain culture that exists in certain, you know, let's see, how do I want to say this? There's a certain culture that exists within certain folks that subscribe to some really dark stuff. And we just don't know if that could be at play here. But judging by some of the stuff that was found in the apartment, that's what concerns me.
I agree with you definitely on the digital side. I think we're going to learn a lot from that because whether it's sinister, I don't think it was a lot of premeditation necessarily, or at least really good experience with premeditation. So I think there's going to be a lot of leakage across all their platforms on the, whether it's from David himself or his entourage, I think there's going to be a lot on that digital.
Suspicion of murder is what he's been arrested on. We don't have official charges as of this recording. Do you think we're going to see additional charges brought on here? Anything involving the age difference between the two of them? We don't know that there was any sort of S relationship going on. I don't know if that can be shown or proven or anything of that nature. But I wonder if are we going to see anything like that tacked on here come Monday when the 48 hours runs up and charges either get brought or he gets released.
Well, I think that unless they have digital proof that they were involved in an intimate way, I don't think we're going to see any charges along those lines.
No.
They're going to have to prove that with photos, videos. It can't just be what people saw. They saw them kissing. I mean, obviously, it seems pretty likely with the sh tattoo on their fingers matching each other and the intimacy that we saw in videos that they were involved. But unless there's, you know, the intimate is recorded, I don't think we're going to see those charges.
I agree. I mean, we're seeing the hard time they have with FLDS and IBLP and all these cults, the hard time they had to prove the underage S that was going on just because no one would come forward. And if you don't have a victim coming forward saying exactly what happened and sometimes even greater proof than that, it's going to be a hard thing to press. So unless they have some, again, some sort of digital footprint, and who knows, maybe she texted friends, maybe she texted her mother about what was going on, but doubtful.
I want to throw this out there because I don't think there really has been much attention onto it, and I'm not trying to be a heartless ass, but I want to look at the family of Celeste Rivas Hernandez. I know, you know, they lost a daughter. That's obviously horrible, but I'm wondering, why was she running away all the time? What's going on at home? Because I don't think we've had this conversation. I don't think anybody's really gone down this road very much. And I'm not accusing them of anything. I don't know what was going on. But usually, if you have a child that's running away constantly and they're being reported missing here and there or optionally, because it seems sometimes she was reported, sometimes she was not. The girl was like a seventh grader. I have a seventh grader. I'm trying to like picture this in my mind as a parent just being so kind of aloof or I don't know what the word is for what the hell was going on here in terms of parenting and parental authority or control or ability over her. That to me, there's other kids in that house that still exist. She had siblings. Why is nobody looking over there? And I'm not in any way insinuating that they had anything to do with her death, but I am questioning, why was she running away so often? And yes, that does happen. Sometimes you get kids, they're going to do that. But I don't know. That just seems to be a rather large red flag that because they are, as well, victims here, they lost their daughter, that this seems to be being glossed over a little bit. Am I crazy for thinking this?
Well, a couple of thoughts. They were first generation LSALs.
Sure.
And I can tell you, you know, that is
when they came here, first of all, you have parents that are likely both working constantly. Mm-hmm. I don't know that for sure. I'm just saying in my experience with them, if you look at Marasava Drucha, which is the MS-13, the reason they had to start was because they were being so horribly victimized by the Mexican gangs that already existed. So you're now in a poor area and you're amongst other people who they have no parental supervision.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard that recording. It's really eerie. It's Celeste screaming at a neighbor.
Yeah.
And Celeste, and she sounds like she's 25, not like she's, you know, she was 14 at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just see, I mean, how she uses language and, you know, profanity and how she talks, the lack of sort of respect, all of that. And again, I'm not victim shaming. I'm strictly saying facts about an environment where kids grow up really fast.
Sure. Yeah.
Boundaries, 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 whether it's by design or by default, you know, a lack of boundaries by whatever reason is what keeps coming up in all these cases. And when you don't have boundaries, and again, parents struggling coming from a foreign country and trying to make ends meet, sure. But at the same time, though, no boundaries means that there's chaos afoot and bad things happen.
I mean, I struggling and all that, I understand. But you got to be a parent too. I don't care where you've come from or what you do. Like, you got kids, and if there's still other kids here, and this is a red flag that a child is continuously running away from a specific home and finding it better, finding life to be better with a stranger celebrity that's almost twice her age. It's rather bizarre, and I would think would demand some sort of investigation. But again, I mean, if... unfortunately, we look at so many cases like this and go, well, you know, the culture in that specific group right here, right now, it is kind of chaotic. It's kind of this is great. Can we fix it? Can we, you know, can we help these community or this family or people? So we don't have children growing up in an atmosphere like this where it's conducive for her to feel like this was the best option for her and end up dead.
Well, you're not going to get much from, I would think, and I'm curious what Jen thinks about it, you're not going to get much from the parents on the investigation anyway, because it's not illegal not to have boundaries.
True.
It's interesting. And how would that compare to like the parents being accountable for the school shooter? But she's not the perpetrator. Yeah. She's the victim. So, I mean, you can't. Anyway,
my concern would be for the remaining living children in that home and what kind of environment inspired her to run away. What are they growing up in? And maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's fine. Maybe there's absolutely nothing. Maybe it's great. But if you have a kid running away like this, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to guess maybe not the best environment. Just call me crazy. I don't know. It feels like something that is, you know, a lost piece of this story. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We would love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join, shop your favorite brands, and save. Target, Instacart, Expedia, Macy's, Sephora, CVS, the list is long. Save online, in-store, and at over 22,000 restaurants. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose PayPal, check, Bilt points, or cash out with gift cards. Eligible American Express card members can choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, order dessert. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/new.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U.
Did you say someone got shot?
November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
Just bone crying, and he said, Coach, they killed him.
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried. Until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming. Because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.